Chapter 21 Closings. The closing event. The setting. The closing event is the culmination of the real estate transaction. During this event, the buyer pays the purchase price and receives title to the purchased real estate. At the same time, the buyer completes financing arrangements, and buyer and seller pay all required taxes, fees, and charges. Customary practices. Procedures and customary practices for conducting real estate closings vary from state to state. For example, it is common in some states for sellers to pay title insurance, while in other states the buyer and seller might share this expense. Students should refer to supplemental state materials to ascertain prevailing practices in their state. Time. The sale contract sets the date of the closing, usually within 60 days of signing. The time period between signing and closing is expected to be sufficient for the removal of any contingencies, such as the buyer's obtaining of financing, the performance of inspections, and the correction of identified physical defects. Failure of either buyer or seller to perform pre-closing actions specified in the contract can delay or terminate the transaction. If the contract includes a statement that time is of the essence, all parties agree to meet time limitations exactly as stated. If both parties consent, however, they can reschedule the closing date. Location. Closings occur at various locations, such as the office of the title company, the lender, the escrow agent, one of the attorneys, the broker, or the county recorder. The sale contract specifies the location. Parties at closing. The primary parties at closing are normally buyer, seller, and a closing agent or escrow officer. Other parties who might be present include the title officer, attorneys, brokers or agents, and the lender's representative. It is not actually necessary for any of these parties to attend the meeting. The closing agent can complete the transaction, provided all documents have been duly executed in advance. The closing process. The closing process consists of buyer and seller verifying that each has fulfilled the terms of the sale contract. If they have, then the mortgage loan, if any, is closed, all expenses are apportioned and paid, the consideration is exchanged for the title, final documents are signed, and arrangements are made to record the transaction according to local laws. Transfer of title. The seller must produce evidence of marketable title, such as commitment for title insurance by a title insurer. Before making a title commitment, a title company performs a title search to discover any liens, encumbrances, restrictions, conditions, or easements attaching to the title. If there are any encumbrances or liens that damage the title, the seller is expected to remove these prior to the date specified in the contract. The most common title cloud is an unpaid lien. The seller may also be asked to execute an affidavit of title, stating that, since the date of the original title search, the seller has incurred no new liens, judgments, unpaid bills for repairs or improvements, no unrecorded deeds or contracts, no bankruptcies or divorces that would affect title, or any other defects the seller is aware of. The purchaser, purchaser's lender, or title company may require a survey to verify the location and size of the property. The company also identifies any easements, encroachments, or floodplain hazard. The buyer should inspect the property to make certain that the property is in the condition in which the seller states that it is, and that any repairs or other required actions have been performed. A final inspection, called a buyer's walkthrough, should be conducted as close to the closing date as possible. If the seller's mortgage liens are to be satisfied at closing, the lender will provide a payoff statement, specifying the amount of unpaid principal and any interest due as of the closing date, plus fees that will be due the lender, and any credits or penalties that may apply. The holder of a note secured by a trust deed will provide a similar statement called a beneficiary statement to show any unpaid balance. Finally, the seller produces and/or deposits with the escrow agent the deed that conveys the property to the buyer. Transfer of purchase funds. The buyer usually produces and/or deposits with the escrow agent the following: earnest money, loan funds and documents, and any other cash needed to complete the purchase. Escrow procedures. If the closing occurs in escrow rather than face-to-face, the principal parties deposit funds and documents with the appointed escrow agent, and the escrow agent disburses funds and releases documents to the appropriate parties when all the conditions of the escrow have been met. If for any reason the transaction cannot be completed, for instance, if the buyer refuses the title as it is offered, or the buyer fails to produce the necessary cash, the escrow instructions usually provide a mechanism for reconveying title to the seller and funds to the buyer. In such a case, both parties return to their original status as if no sale had occurred. Lender closing requirements. A lender is concerned about the quality of the collateral a borrower is providing in return for the mortgage loan. The collateral would be endangered by defects in the title, by liens that would take precedence over the mortgage lien, such as tax lien, and by physical damage to the property which is not repaired. Consequently, the lender typically requires a survey, a property inspection, hazard insurance, a title insurance policy, a reserve account for taxes and insurance, and possibly private mortgage insurance. In some cases, the lender may also require a certificate of occupancy, verifying that any new construction performed complies with local building codes. Broker's role. A broker usually continues to provide service between the signing of the sale contract and the closing by helping to make arrangements for pre-closing activities such as inspections, surveys, appraisals and repairs, and generally taking steps to ensure that the closing can proceed as scheduled. A broker may conduct proceedings at the closing meeting, or may have no further role in the transaction after the sale contract is signed, depending on local practices and the transaction in question. In many states, the broker is charged with the responsibility for accuracy and timely delivery of the closing documents to the principal parties. A broker may also have the responsibility for reporting the transaction to the Internal Revenue Service. Finally, if the seller of the property is a non-resident alien, U.S. law may require the broker to withhold and transmit to the Internal Revenue Service a portion of the sale proceeds to cover the alien seller's income tax liability. There are also special reporting requirements when the transaction involves a non-resident alien. Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act, or RESPA. The Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act, or RESPA, is a consumer protection statute enacted in 1974. Its purpose is to clarify settlement costs and to eliminate kickbacks and fees that increase settlement costs. RESPA specifies certain closing procedures when a purchase involves a residential property, including 1 to 4 family residences, cooperatives, and condominiums, involves a first or second mortgage lien, and is being financed by a federally related mortgage loan, which includes loans made by a federally insured lender, loans insured or guaranteed by the VA or FHA, loans administered by HUD, and loans intended to be sold to Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, or Ginnie Mae. RESPA is directed at lenders and settlement companies, but licensees should be familiar with requirements and changes implemented as of January 2014. The Dodd-Frank Act of 2010 granted rulemaking authority under RESPA to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, CFPB, and generally granted the CFPB authority to supervise and enforce compliance with RESPA and its implementing regulations. TRID. Effective October 3, 2015, a Truth in Lending RESPA rule called the Integrated Disclosure Rule, or TRID, integrated the disclosure requirements of RESPA and Truth in Lending provisions. It also replaced the old good faith estimate form and the HUD-1 uniform settlement statement with a new loan estimate form and closing disclosure form, respectively. Information booklet. A lender subject to RESPA must give loan applicants the CFPB booklet, Your Home Loan Toolkit, within 3 days of receiving a loan application. This booklet describes loans, closing costs, and the closing disclosure form. Loan estimate. A lender must give the applicant, at the time of the application or within 3 business days of application, a loan estimate, H24, of likely settlement costs. This estimate is usually based on comparable transactions completed in the area. The terms stated in the closing disclosure must agree with those of the loan estimate within certain limits. Mortgage servicing disclosure. The lender must disclose to the buyer whether the lender intends to service the loan or convey it to another lender for servicing. This disclosure must also be accompanied by information as to how the buyer can resolve complaints. Closing disclosure. Under CFPB rules, a lender must use the closing disclosure, H25, to disclose settlement costs to the buyer. This form covers all costs that the buyer will have to pay at closing, whether to the lender or to other parties. Use of this form enforces RESPA's prohibitions against a lender requiring a buyer to deposit an excessive amount in the tax and insurance escrow account or to use a particular title company for title insurance. The consumer must receive the completed form not later than 3 business days before closing and has the right to inspect a revised form 1 business day before closing. A description and example of this form are provided later in this chapter. Disclosures after settlement. Loan servicers must provide borrowers with an annual escrow statement which summarizes all inflows and outflows in the prior 12-month period. The statement must also disclose shortfalls or overages in the account and how the discrepancies will be resolved. Limits on escrow accounts. Section 10 of RESPA limits the amounts lenders can require borrowers to place in escrow for purposes of paying taxes, hazard insurance, and other property-related expenses. The limitation applies to the initial deposits as well as deposits made over the course of the loan's term. Referral fees and kickbacks. RESPA prohibits the payment of fees as part of a real estate settlement when no services are actually rendered. This prohibition includes referral fees for such services as title searches, title insurance, mortgage loans, appraisals, credit reports, inspections, surveys, and legal services. Business relationships and affiliations among real estate firms, mortgage brokers, title insurance firms, and other such companies that are involved in a transaction are permitted, provided the relationships are disclosed in writing to the consumer. The consumer is free to go elsewhere for the relevant service, and the companies do not exchange fees for referrals. Financial settlement of the transaction. Settlement process. The process of settlement consists of 5 basic steps. 1. Identifying selling terms and closing costs. 2. Determining non-prorated debits and credits. 3. Determining prorated debits and credits. 4. Completing the closing statement. And 5. Disbursing funds. Selling terms and closing costs. Selling terms are the price of the property, the buyer's deposit and down payment, and the terms and amounts of the buyer's financing arrangements. Closing costs are final expenses that buyer or seller must pay at closing to complete the transaction. The sale contract identifies all selling terms and who pays which costs. The apportionment of expenses is subject to negotiation, and in the absence of a specific agreement, is determined by custom. Closing costs include such items as brokerage fees, mortgage-related fees, title-related expenses, and real estate taxes. Debits and credits. The closing statement accounts for the debits and credits of the buyer and seller to settle and complete the transaction. A debit is an amount that one party must pay at closing or has already paid prior to closing. A credit is an amount that a party must receive at closing or that has already been received prior to closing. The excess of the buyer's debits over the buyer's credits is the amount the buyer must bring to the closing. The excess of the seller's credits over the seller's debits is the amount the seller will receive at closing. An individual expense item that one party owes to a party unrelated to the transaction, such as an attorney or the state, is treated as a debit to that party only. An income or expense item that affects both parties is apportioned, or prorated, to each party to reflect the proper amount that each owes or should receive. A prorated item is treated as a debit to one party and a credit to the other party for the same amount. Buyer's debits and credits. To determine how much money the buyer owes at closing, the buyer's debits are totaled and compared with the total of the buyer's credits. The excess of debits over credits is the amount the buyer must bring to the closing, usually in the form of a cashier's check or certified check. Seller's credits and debits. To determine how much the seller will receive at closing, the same procedure is followed for the seller's debits and credits. The excess of credits over debits is what the seller will receive. Non-prorated items. Non-prorated items are costs incurred by one party only. Items not prorated include recording fees, stamp taxes, intangible taxes, attorney fees, title insurance, etc. Many of the items to be settled at the closing are partly the responsibility of the buyer and partly of the seller. Some are expense items that the seller has paid in advance, where the buyer owes the seller part of the expense. Some are income items that the seller received in advance, and the seller owes the buyer a part of the income. Others are items that the buyer will have to pay in arrears, and the seller owes the buyer part of the expense. The method of dividing financial responsibility for such items is proration. With a prorated item, there is always a debit to one party and a corresponding credit for the same amount to the other party. Items paid in advance. At the time of the closing, the seller has paid some items in advance that cover a period of time that goes beyond the closing date. In effect, the seller has prepaid some of the buyer's expenses, and the buyer must reimburse the seller. Heating oil and natural gas are typical items. By the same token, the seller of a rental property must have received rent or rental deposits in advance and must reimburse the buyer for the part that belongs to the buyer. For an expense the seller paid in advance, the buyer receives a debit and the seller receives a credit. For income the seller received in advance, the buyer receives a credit and the seller receives a debit. Items paid in arrears. At the time of closing, the seller has incurred certain expenses that have not been billed or paid at the time of closing and that the buyer will have to pay later. A typical item is real estate taxes. For an item the buyer will pay in arrears, the buyer receives a credit and the seller receives a debit. Computing prorations. 12-month 30-day method. 365-day method. The primary methods of calculating prorations are the 360-30-day method, which commutes prorations on the basis of a 360-day year and a 30-day month, and the 365-day method, which computes prorations on the basis of a 365-day year. The 360-30-day method is commonly used for prorating mortgage interest. Either method may be used for real estate taxes, depending on local practice. It is customary in most states that the seller owns the property up to and including the day of closing, unless stated otherwise in the contract. Thus, the closing day is apportioned to the seller in computing prorations. The method of prorating, if not specified in the contract, will follow local custom. 12-month 30-day method. The 12-month 30-day method determines an average daily rate of payment for an item to be prorated based on a 30-day month and a 360-day year. The method consists of the following steps for annual and monthly items. Annual items. 1. Identify the total amount to be prorated. 2. Divide this amount by 12 to obtain an average monthly rate. 3. Divide the monthly rate by 30 to obtain an average daily rate. 4. Multiply the monthly amount times the seller's number of months of ownership in the year of the sale up to the month of closing. For the month of closing, multiply the seller's number of days of ownership times the daily amount and add this result to the previous result. The final result is the seller's pro rata share of this item. 5. The buyer's pro rata share of an item is the total amount less the seller's pro rata share. Monthly items. 1. Identify the total amount to be prorated. 2. Divide this amount by 30 to obtain the average daily amount. 3. Multiply the daily amount times the seller's number of days of ownership. The result is the seller's pro rata share of this item. 4. The buyer's pro rata share of an item is the total amount less the seller's pro rata share. 365-day method. The 365-day method uses the actual number of days in the calendar. The steps in the calculation are the same for annual and monthly proration. The steps are: 1. Identify the total annual or monthly amount to be prorated. 2. For an annual proration, divide the total amount by 365 to obtain a daily amount, 366 in a leap year. For a monthly proration, divide the total amount by the actual number of days in the month to obtain the daily amount. 3. Multiply the daily amount times the seller's number of days of ownership. The result is the seller's pro rata share of the item. 4. The buyer's pro rata share of an item is the total amount less the seller's pro rata share. Taxes due at closing. State taxes on the deed. State taxes on the mortgage. Certain transfer taxes that are due in connection with the closing appear and are accounted for on the closing statement. These include state taxes relating to the deed and to the buyer's mortgage. In addition to state-imposed taxes, counties and municipalities may also impose a tax on the real estate transfer. State taxes on the deed. Most states impose a transfer tax when real estate is conveyed. The tax is usually paid when the deed is recorded, often in the form of documentary stamps purchased from the recorder where the deed is recorded. The stamps must be attached to deeds and conveyances before they are recorded. Tax rates are specific to each state. Methods of stating the transfer tax due include quoting the tax as a percentage of the taxable consideration and as a dollar rate per $100 of total selling price. If the number of 100s is not a whole number, it must be rounded up to the next 100. State taxes on the mortgage. Some states also impose a tax on instruments that contain promises to pay money, such as mortgages, notes, and contracts. Such taxes may be paid by the purchase of documentary stamps from the agency, which will record the instrument. In addition, some states impose a further tax on the mortgage as an item of intangible personal property. Taxes on the mortgage are typically paid by the buyer or borrower. TILA-RESPA Integrated Disclosure Rule. Forms and procedures. As mentioned earlier, the TILA-RESPA Integrated Disclosures, TRID, rule is in effect as of October 3, 2015. These changes introduce new mandatory forms and procedures to replace the old ones as follows. Lenders must give the consumer a copy of the booklet, Your Home Loan Toolkit, at the time of loan application. Lenders must deliver or mail the loan estimate, Form H-24, to the consumer no later than the third business day after receiving a loan application. A business day, in this context, is any day on which the lender's offices are open for business. An application exists when the consumer has given the lender or mortgage broker six pieces of information: name, income, social security number, property address, estimated value of property, and loan amount sought. And lenders must provide the closing disclosure, Form H-25, to the customer at least three business days before consummation of the loan. A business day in this context is any calendar day, except a Sunday, or the day on which the legal public holiday is observed. Consummation refers to the day on which the borrower becomes indebted to the creditor. This may or may not correspond to the day of closing the transaction. Good faith. Creditors are responsible for ensuring that the figures stated in the loan estimate are made in good faith and consistent with the best information reasonably available to the creditor at the time they are disclosed. Good faith is measured by calculating the difference between the estimated charges originally provided in the loan estimate and the actual charges paid by or imposed on the consumer in the closing disclosure. Generally, if the charge paid by or imposed on the consumer exceeds the amount originally disclosed in the loan estimate, it is not in good faith, regardless of whether the creditor later discovers a technical error, miscalculation, or underestimation of a charge, although there are exceptions. Types of charges. For certain costs or terms, creditors are permitted to charge consumers more than the amount disclosed on the loan estimate without any tolerance limitation. These charges are prepaid interest, property insurance premiums, amounts placed into an escrow, impound, reserve or similar account, charges for services required by the creditor if the creditor permits the consumer to shop and the consumer selects a third-party service provider not on the creditor's written list of service providers, and charges paid to third-party service providers for services not required by the creditor, may be paid to affiliates of the creditor. However, creditors may only charge consumers more than the amount disclosed when the original estimated charge was based on the best information reasonably available to the creditor at the time the disclosure was provided. Charges for third-party services and recording fees paid by or imposed on the consumer are grouped together and subject to a 10% cumulative tolerance, 10% tolerance charges. This means the creditor may charge the consumer more than the amount disclosed on the loan estimate for any of these charges, so long as the total sum of the charges added together does not exceed the sum of all such charges disclosed on the loan estimate by more than 10%. For all other charges, zero tolerance charges, creditors are not permitted to charge consumers more than the amount disclosed on the loan estimate under any circumstances other than changed circumstances that permit a revised loan estimate. If the amounts paid by the consumer at closing exceed the amounts disclosed on the loan estimate beyond the applicable tolerance threshold, the creditor must refund the excess to the consumer no later than 60 calendar days after consummation. Applicable transactions. The Integrated Disclosures Rule applies to most closed-end consumer mortgages. It does not apply to home equity lines of credit, HELOCs, reverse mortgages, mortgages secured by a mobile home or by a dwelling that is not attached to real property, in this case, land, or loans made by persons who are not considered creditors by virtue of the fact that they make five or fewer mortgages in a year. However, certain types of loans that used to be subject to TILA but not RESPA are now subject to the TILA-RESPA's rules integrated disclosure requirements, including construction-only loans, loans secured by vacant land or by 25 or more acres, or Credit extended to certain trusts for tax or estate planning. Guides and detailed information about current TILA-RESPA rules can be found on the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau website. Reporting requirements. Who must report? The Tax Reform Act of 1986 requires that persons designated by the Act as real estate brokers must report a closed real estate transaction to the Internal Revenue Service and provide the information contained in the report to each party to the transaction. The Act defines real estate broker as any of the following: the seller's broker, the buyer's broker, the settlement agent, escrow agent, attorney, title company, or other party responsible for closing the transaction, the mortgage lender, and anyone so designated by the Internal Revenue Service. What must be filed? The person reporting files a Form 1099-S information return with the Internal Revenue Service. This form includes the names and addresses of the parties to the transaction and information about the sale proceeds. The reporting person also provides each party to the transaction with a written statement showing the name and address of the reporting party, as well as the information reported in the 1099. If the transaction involves a non-resident alien, the reporting person may also have tax reporting and withholding responsibilities. Chapter 21 Snapshot Review. The closing event. The setting. Sale contract sets date, location, and who participates. The closing process. The closing process must verify contract fulfillment, exchange consideration and title, pay expenses, sign final documents, and arrange for recording the transaction. Transfer of title. Seller gives evidence of marketability. Title abstract or title insurance commitment may also need affidavit stating no new encumbrances incurred. Seller must remove encumbrances or liens prior to the specified date. If seller is paying off mortgage lien, lender provides a payoff statement. Transfer of purchase funds. Buyer produces funds and documents needed to complete the transaction. Escrow procedures. If closing in escrow, escrow agent holds and disburses funds and releases documents when escrow conditions have been met. Lender closing requirements. Common. Survey, inspections, hazard insurance, title insurance, certificate of occupancy, reserves for taxes and insurance, private mortgage insurance. Broker's role. Broker's role ranges from nil to conducting the proceedings to reporting the transaction. Real Estate Settlements Procedures Act. For residential property, first or second mortgage, federally related mortgage, assumption modifying loan terms, lender charging over $50 for assumption. Information booklet. Lender must provide borrower with CFPB booklet, Your Home Loan Toolkit. Loan estimate. Lender must provide CFPB's H24 loan estimate of settlement costs. Mortgage servicing disclosure. Lender must disclose who will be servicing loan. Closing disclosure. Lender must use CFPB's H25 closing disclosure. Disclosures after settlement. Loan servicers must provide annual escrow statements to borrowers. Limits on escrow accounts. Places ceiling on amounts lenders may compel borrowers to place in escrow. Referral fees and kickbacks. RESPA prohibits payment of referral fees and kickbacks. Business relationships between firms involved in the transaction must be disclosed. Financial settlement of the transaction. Settlement process. Identify closing costs, determine who pays what, do prorations, assign debits and credits, complete closing statement, and disburse funds. Selling terms and closing costs. Price, deposits, down payment, financing, final expenses to be paid at closing, apportionment of expenses determined by sale contract or custom. Debits and credits. Excess of buyer's debits over credits is the amount the buyer must produce at closing. Excess of seller's credits over debits is the amount the seller must receive. Non-prorated items. Incurred by one party only, not shared. Prorated items. Incurred by buyer or seller in advance or arrears, shared by buyer and seller. In a typical scenario, real estate taxes, insurance premiums, mortgage interest, rent. Typical prorated items include real estate taxes, insurance premiums, mortgage interest, and rents. Computing prorations. Sale contract or local custom establishes methods of proration to be used for particular items. 12-month, 30-day method. Determines average daily amount based on 12-month year and 30-day month. 365-day method. Determines an amount using the actual number of calendar days. Taxes due at closing. State taxes on deed. State, counties, and municipalities may impose taxes on transfer. State taxes on mortgage. State may impose taxes on mortgage, notes, and contracts. TILA-RESPA Integrated Disclosures Rule. Forms and Procedures. Effective October 3, 2015. Mandatory. Your Home Loan Toolkit Booklet at Loan Application. Loan Estimate Form, 3 business days after loan application. Closing Disclosure, 3 business days before consummation. Good Faith. Loan estimate costs based on best information available. Closing disclosure costs equal estimate costs with certain tolerances. Types of charges. No limitation on increase over estimate. 10% tolerance charges. Zero tolerance charges. Types of charges. No limitation on increase over estimate, 10% tolerance charges, or zero tolerance charges. Applicable transactions. Zero tolerance charges. Most closed-end consumer mortgages, including construction loans, loans secured by vacant land, loans to trusts. Not covered. Home equity loans, reverse mortgages, loans on mobile homes, loans by small lenders, no more than 5 loans per year. The H-25 form, 5 pages, variable by loan type. Reporting requirements. Who must report? Real estate broker, defined by the Tax Reform Act of 1986. Buyer's or seller's broker, settlement agent, mortgage lender, other IRS-designated party. What must be filed? Form 1099-S information return, statements to each party, and tax reporting and withholding if FIR PTA applies, non-resident alien.